Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 2. And the verse that we're going to chant together is text 30. But there's a few before that that don't have purports, so I'll just read those. Text 23 and 24. Surrounded by the herd's other elephants, including females, and followed by the young ones, Gajapati, the leader of the elephants, made Trikuta Mountain tremble all around because of the weight of his body. He was perspiring, liquor dripped from his mouth, and his vision was overwhelmed by intoxication. He was being served by bumblebees who drank honey, and from a distance he could smell the dust of the lotus flowers, which was carried from the lake by the breeze. Thus, surrounded by his associates, who were afflicted by thirst, he soon arrived at the bank of the lake. The king of the elephants entered the lake, bathed thoroughly, and was relieved of his fatigue. Then, with the aid of his trunk, he drank the cold, clear nectarian water, which was mixed with the dust of lotus flowers and water lilies, until he was fully satisfied. O king, the elephant and the crocodile fought. Wait, maybe I missed something. No, I did. I just skipped over a page. Okay. Until he was fully satisfied. Like a human being who lacks spiritual knowledge and is too attached to the members of his family, the elephant, being illusioned by the external energy of Krishna, had his wives and children bathe and drink the water. Indeed, he raised water from the lake with his trunk and sprayed it over them. He did not mind the hard labor involved in this endeavor. By the arrangement of Providence, O king, a strong crocodile was angry at the elephant and attacked the elephant's leg in the water. The elephant was certainly strong, and he tried his best to get free from this danger sent by Providence. Thereafter, seeing Gajendra in that grave condition, his wives felt very, very sorry and began to cry. The other elephants wanted to help Gajendra, but because of the crocodile's great strength, they could not rescue him by grasping him from behind. O king, the elephant and the crocodile fought in this way, pulling one another in and out of the water for 1,000 years. Upon seeing the fight, the demigods were very surprised. And that brings us to today's verse. Tato Gajendrasya Manobalo Jasam Kalena Dirgena Mahanabudvayaya. Vikrishyamanasya Jalevasi Dato Viparyayo Bhutsakalam Jalokasa Tato Gajendrasya Manobalo Jasam Kalena Dirgena Mahanabudhyaya Krishyamanasya Jalevasidato Viparyayo Bhutsakalam Jalojasa Tato Gajendrasya Manobalojasam Kalena Dirgena Mahanabhuvyaya Krishyamanasya Jalevasidato Viparyayo Bhutsakalam Jalokasa. Others?
Thank you.
Vaishnavis. Thereafter. Gajya Indrasya, of the king of the elephants. Manaha, of the strength of enthusiasm. Bala, the physical strength. Ojasam, the strength of the senses. Kalena, because of years of fighting. Dirgena, prolonged. Mahan, great. Abut, became. Yaya, the expenditure. Vikrishyamanasya, who is being pulled by. So, who is being pulled? By the crocodile. Jale, into the water, a foreign place. Avasidata, reduced mental, physical, and sensory strength. Viparyaya, the opposite. But became sakalam, all of them. Jala okasa, the crocodile, whose home is the water. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, because of being pulled into the water and fighting for many long years, the elephant became diminished in his mental, physical, and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength, and sensual power. Purport. In the fighting between the elephant and the crocodile, the difference was that although the elephant was extremely powerful, he was in a foreign place, in the water. During 1,000 years of fighting, he could not get any food, and under the circumstances, his bodily strength diminished. Because his bodily strength diminished, his mind also became weak and his senses less powerful. The crocodile, however, being an animal of the water, had no difficulties. He was getting food and was therefore getting mental strength and sensual encouragement. Thus, while the elephant became reduced in strength, the crocodile became more and more powerful. Now, from this we may take the lesson that in our fight with Maya, we should not be in a position in which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. Our Krishna conscious movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy, in which all living entities are rotting in a false understanding of civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna consciousness movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm, and sensual power. To keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone, and therefore there are divisions of vanashram, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is advised that no one takes sannyas, Ashvamedham Galavambam Sanyasyam Palapaitrikam Devarena Sutotpaptim Kalo Pancha Vivarjayet. From this we can understand that in this age the sannyas ashram is forbidden because people are not strong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us an example in taking sannyas at the age of 24 years, but even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be extremely careful because he had taken sannyas at an early age. For preaching, we give young boys sannyas, but actually it is being experienced that they are not fit for sannyas. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyas. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely the Grihastha ashram. That one has been found to be very weak in one place does not mean that he should stop fighting the crocodile of Maya. One should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, as we shall see Gajendra do, and at the same time, one can be a Grihastha if he is satisfied with sexual indulgence. And there's no need to give up the fight. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended Stanejtita Srutikatam Tanuvan Manobi. One may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the Grihastha ashram, but one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position, to take sannyas artificially is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the Grihastha ashram and fight with Maya with great strength. But one should not give up the fighting and go away. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Govardhavani Pacharane Nivashesha Sanyavadi Paschacharya Shacharane. So Prabhupada is using this story, and he's referring to it in a metaphorical way, and he's drawing an analogy so that we can get to sort of deliver different lessons here. And the main lesson he's talking about is basically sort of states it right in the last sentence. One should not give up the fighting and go away. So we could just, since he uses this as an analogy, a metaphorical way, we'll talk a little bit about the actual situation here. So Gajendra is attacked by this crocodile. And as Prabhupada pointed out in the purport, the crocodile had the upper hand. He had the upper hand in every which way, if you just stop and think about it. First of all, the crocodile attacked. Elements of surprise. Gajendra didn't know what was going on. The crocodile knew everything. He had his plan, strategy. Gajendra was just kind of like, hey, what's going on here, He's totally taken by surprise. Okay, so he's at a disadvantage in that sense. He's in a disadvantage because he's immediately in excruciating pain. I mean, even as powerful as Gajendra was, can you imagine what it would be like if all of a sudden a crocodile bites you on the leg? It doesn't matter how powerful you are, that's got to hurt, and it's got to hurt a lot. So, he's taken by surprise. He's immediately in excruciating pain. He's in the water, although it does describe that the fight went on for 1,000 years, which is like hard to imagine how he could endure that long. And it's described how sometimes they were pulling one another in and out of the water. So this was an amazing, Gajendra was putting up an amazing heroic fight there, in and out of the water. But another way in which the crocodile had the upper hand is that he had Gajendra's leg. He had Gajendra's leg. Gajendra didn't have anything on him. It's at least it's not described here. It's not like Gajendra, used his trunk and grabbed the crocodile's tails. No, he was all on the upper hand there. That crocodile, anytime he wanted to, he could have escaped from that fight, simply by releasing the leg. If it was in the water, he could have released the leg and swam away. If it was on the land, he could have released the leg and run away. Actually, crocodiles are very fast for about 50 yards. I can't remember the figures, but I remember learning this years ago that they can move very fast for a short distance. So if the crocodile wanted to, he could have released Gajendra's leg and just shot back into the water, and that would have been it. So in every which way, He had the upper hand. It's also mentioned that he was getting food. The crocodile could get food, but Gajendra couldn't. And I don't know what the only food I can think of that could be referring to is Gajendra's blood. You know, because he penetrated, he bit onto his leg, and he was, you know, maybe that was the food. I don't know. It doesn't really get into any details. But, you know, it was all like, you know, it wasn't a fair fight. You know, the crocodile really had the upper hand, and poor Gajendra had to just kind of, was the underdog. Now, so once again, this is like, you know, Prabhupada's using this as an analogy, and there's so many different ways, so many different points of analogy here. So does anybody know who was this crocodile? Who is the crocodile? What? No, the crocodile. No, Gajendra is the elephant. Who's the crocodile? Actually, I'll be a little bit. The crocodile was, if you read on, it was this King Huhu, who happened to be a Gandharva. And he made some offense. I can't remember what he did, but he got cursed to become a crocodile. And but metaphorically speaking, who is the crocodile? An aspect of Maya. In the last purport of this chapter, Prabhupada clearly states who the crocodile was. He says, I'll just read this, everyone should fear death because everyone is caught by the crocodile of eternal time. So that crocodile is the crocodile of eternal time. So everybody's caught by the crocodile of eternal time and they die at any moment. The best course, therefore, is to seek shelter of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and be saved from the struggle for existence in the material world in which one repeatedly takes birth and death. So this crocodile, Huhu, whatever his name was, so he represents eternal time. And Prabhupada goes on, you know, and by the context there, we can understand, you know, some of the things that eternal time does. You know, it causes us to be, and imposes death upon every living entity within the material world and keeps us in this cycle of struggling for existence and repeated birth and death. So in other words, eternal time is more than just tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock forever. You know, it's an energy of Krishna, and it's kind of like, if you study up on it, it seems to be works in conjunction with karma and the omniscience of the Supreme Lord, and to award destiny, you know, destiny to every living entity, to award the results of fruitive activities to all the conditioned souls of the material universe, which generally speaking keeps them struggling for existence, as mentioned here, within the cycle of birth and death. But it operates under the ultimately under the unconstrained will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore it's a very difficult thing to understand. And even Bhishma Dev was at one point he was kind of, there's this verse, Aho Kastana, Aho Yuyam, I can't remember the rest of it, but he's saying, how is it that the Pandavas, you know, they were such nice devotees of Krishna, how is it that they had to suffer in so many different ways? And he's reflecting, you know, and he came to the conclusion, it's just due to the influence of Kala. So it's you know, it's Krishna's energy. And this analogy popped, just like this analogy popped into my mind as I was preparing for the class. It's just like if you have a lawnmower. So the lawnmower is your machine. So Kala is like a machine. And, you know, you're operating the lawnmower. You see, we know what the lawnmower does. It just mows down the grass. So we know what Kala does. It just mows down the conditioned souls, you know, in material life, you know, awards them death and then rebirth. See, but it's under the control. The lawnmower, at least, is under the control of the person who's, you know, pushing it around the lawn. And you could push it here and you could push it there. You could, you know, skip a little patch and go around. And it's under your control. So in the same way, this energy, Kala, is ultimately, it's under the control of Krishna. So anyway, so that's what Kala is. That's what eternal time is. The crocodile represents eternal time. And that's, so, you know, and that's who's bitten Gajendra's leg, the crocodile of eternal time. So now Prabhupada says here in the purport, he's pointing out that, you know, we should fight. You shouldn't give up the fight. He's saying Gajendra shouldn't give up the fight. He should continue to fight. And he draws that analogy, just like somebody, the Gajendra, he couldn't fight properly because he was a creature of the land and he was being pulled into the water and he couldn't get anything to eat, whereas the crocodile could. So Prabhupada's making the point that in our fight against Maya, we have to try to be in a condition where we can, as Prabhupada puts it here, he says, in which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be able to fight vigorously. But one thing I wanted to point out was that, you know, Gajendra in this fight, he was fighting to the best he could, but he fought on two different levels. His first level of fighting was unsuccessful. His first level of fighting was just like, you know, a direct, like, confrontation. Okay, let me just use my personal resources, my strength, my intelligence, my elephant cleverness or whatever, and try to fight this crocodile. I'll pull him out onto the land. I'll, you know, try to shake my leg and shake him off, or I'll try to fall down. You know, whatever he was, it went on for 1,000 years. They must have done a bunch of stuff, you know. I mean, in 1,000 years, you probably could use every fighting move you could possibly think of. So a lot went on for 1,000 years, you know, in that fight. But then finally, Gajendra abandoned that attempt. You know, after 1,000 years of fighting and struggling, he could see that it's not going to work. I'm not going to be able to defeat this crocodile. You know, he's just got the upper hand here. And my wife's, what to speak of my, you know, even these other powerful elephants can't come to my rescue and save me. What to speak of my wives? Nobody could help me. So then he took to his second stage of fighting. And his second stage of fighting was what? Huh? Yeah. His second stage of fighting was he started to offer prayers to the supreme authority. You know? And he didn't directly, like, you know, like and Prabhupada points out in some purports, the demigods didn't come because he didn't call out for the demigods. He, you know, was praying to the supreme authority. And that was his strategy. You know, that was the way he conducted the second part of his fight, by just praying, you know, offering prayers, surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Authority. And mostly those prayers, if you read them, it's about another 30 verses. There's a whole chapter there, Gajendra offers prayers. Gajendra's prayers of surrender. They're mostly just glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's one prayer, only one prayer that I read him last night, where he says, so therefore, please deliver me from this present danger and from the danger of the materialistic way of life. But for the most part, he's just glorifying Krishna. Notice he's surrendered. It's mentioned further on that he was, in his previous life, he was King Indradumna. And he had already, as King Indradumna, he had retired from worldly affairs, and he was at some sort of a hermitage, and he was meditating. And, you know, he was deep in meditation, and Agastya Muni happened to pass by with, I can't remember, with some disciples or not. But Agastya Muni wasn't impressed by the king's meditation. He felt that this king should, you know, have offered me some sort of a acknowledgement, recognition, reception, and he's just ignored me completely, and he became offended, and he cursed King Indradumna to become an elephant. And that's how he became an elephant. You know, but the thing was, it doesn't mention in the story there in the Bhagavatam that the King Indradumna was feigning meditation. You know, you get the impression when you read it that he was really meditating. You know, so it's kind of like, wow, that's pretty, you know, pretty severe punishment for an honest mistake. I mean, he was actually meditating, and he wasn't, it's possible that he was oblivious to the sage's presence. He wasn't even aware of it, but still, anyway, he got punished like that. And but because he was a great devotee, he was able to, at this point, he was able to remember, and he was, as Gajendra, he was able to offer these prayers. So that was the fight See, that was his fight. His fighting was, you know, initially he was fighting using his own strength and intelligence and everything, you know. But then he realized, I'm not going to win. It's not going to work. And the second part of his fight was surrendering, trying to just take shelter of Krishna. And that was successful. You see? And same thing with Draupadi. You know, when they were trying to disrobe her, they pulled her out. Dusasana came and pulled her out and started pulling her sari off. And at first she was trying to defend herself. You know, she was trying to use her, whatever she could, her whatever strength she had. And, you know, she was appealing to the different warriors there, to, you know, to Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya and their husbands and this and that. She was, you know, she was doing whatever she could to try to avert the disaster, you know, to stop that from happening or being disrobed. And neither thing was working. You know, she wasn't strong enough to keep Dushasana from pulling off the sari, and her pleas for assistance fell upon deaf ears. You know, her husbands weren't responding, Bhishma Dev didn't respond, Dronacharya didn't respond, whoever she appealed to, Dhritarashtra, nobody responded. And so she, at that point, she realized she did like Gajendra. She just sized the whole thing up and she decided, you know what? And it's like, I'm not going to, why waste my energy? I'm just going to take shelter of Krishna. And then she went, hey, Govinda. You know, and she just like took shelter. She put her arms up. She stopped even trying to hold the sari on. She just threw her arms up in the air and, you know, prayed to Krishna. Okay, Krishna, you know, whatever you want. I'm just surrendering to you, and whatever you want, please just, you know, just do it. And Krishna chose to save her. He not only, you know, they weren't even able to disrobe her. And of course, she was saved materially and spiritually. And Gajendra was more or less saved, you could say, materially and spiritually, because, you know, Gajendra, when Lord Vishnu came, and eventually he came, after Gajendra offered his prayers, Lord Vishnu shows up on Garuda, you know. And all the demigods, actually, it's described, a lot of demigods came along with him, and they were offering prayers to Lord Vishnu. And Prabhupada explains in one purport that actually the reason that was going on is because the demigods felt offended. They didn't come to help Gajendra because Gajendra wasn't calling for them. He was calling for the supreme authority. He didn't call for any of the demigods. And they felt offended, you know. But then when Lord Vishnu decided to come, they realized that it was offensive for them to be thinking like that. You know, that it was good that he was trying to take shelter of the supreme authority. So they were coming and offering prayers to Lord Vishnu as he was gliding in on Garuda to come and rescue Gajendra. And anyway, so he got there, and Lord Vishnu went into the water, and he pulled them both out. He pulled out Gajendra and that crocodile who was on his leg, and then he took a Sudarshan chakra and he chopped the body of the crocodile in half. And immediately, the crocodile was transformed into his form of a Gandharva. And I can't remember, he offered some prayers or not, but he just pretty much straight away went back to Gandharva Loka. And then Gajendra received his spiritual body in Vaikuntha, you know, Sarupya Mukti. He was benedicted or given, awarded Sarupya Mukti right on the spot. And he got his eternal, you know, forearm form. And he was taken back to the spiritual world by Lord Vishnu on Garuda. So that's happening. So, but the point being that, once again, the fight was, like in the case of Gajendra, in the case of Draupadi, taking shelter. So that's what, you know, Prabhupada is saying here in his purport. He's talking about don't give up the fighting. So in the last sentence, what one should not give up fighting and go away. So we have to understand, if we're not going to give it up, we have to understand what it is. The fighting is the attempt to take shelter, the attempt to shelter, a surrender to Krishna, surrender to the instructions of the spiritual master, surrender to Krishna. That's the fight. That's the fight. So the real point that's being made here, that I think the way to understand this is, okay, you're in a particular situation. You could try to make some adjustment. You could try to, like, if you're finding it difficult in the sannyasa ashram, you could try to make some adjustment and go to the grihastha ashram. You know, that's okay. You know, it's not the end of the world. Or if you're in the grihastha ashram and that's not working, okay, you can try to make some adjustment and go to sannyasa ashram or go to, you know, whatever ashram. You know, or It's okay. You can make some. And Prabhupada's even encouraging here that one should make some adjustment if it seems to, you know, be necessary. But to what purpose? To what end? The end is that so to keep fighting to so that you ultimately the real thing is to take shelter of Krishna. See, the adjustment in and of itself is not the solution to the problem. You know, so that somebody's finding it difficult in the sannyasa ashram, and they make an adjustment and they go to the grihastha ashram. That's not the solution to the problem. That's just that. It's adjustment. It might help. It may be helpful. You see, it's not like there's no difficulties in the grihastha ashram. Right. In any ashram you're in, there's going to be problems. As a sannyasa, there's challenges. As a grihastha, there's challenges. As a brahmachari, there's challenges. You know. So, and if Prabhupada's saying here, okay, but if, you know, if you think you need to, okay, make an adjustment. Go to this ashram. Go to that ashram. I mean, and you'll find examples throughout the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita of, you know, people, different devotees making adjustments and, you know, changing a situation. But ultimately, what you have to do is you really just have to. You know, the real thing is to just try to take shelter of the philosophy. You know, to like you might be sannyasa ashram, grihastha ashram. Ultimately, you just have to understand the philosophy is Jeev Krishna Das. You know, Jeev Krishna. The living entity is the eternal servant of Krishna. I got to try to seriously engage in favorable devotional service, and that's ultimately the only thing that's going to help me become free from this crocodile of eternal time. You see? And that's what Gajendra experienced, and that's what Draupadi experienced, you know, and that's it, that's the philosophy. So, you know, you basically, Prabhupada used to say, make the best use of a bad bargain. See? So what's really being emphasized here is not like, you know, changing from this ashram to that ashram. What's really being emphasized here is you've got to keep fighting, and really, what that means is understanding that I'm in the material world. I have a material body, and there's no way around that. There's disadvantages. I gotta just accept the fact that okay, you know, I gotta make the best use of a bad bargain, and just you know, roll up my sleeves and get to work at just doing what I need to do to be, you know, to get absorbed in Krishna consciousness, be favorably engaged in devotional service. That's the real fighting, and. Yeah, and no adjustment. Well, I mean, as devotees, we're already past the stage of you know thinking that any kind of adjustment will help. It won't. That's the real thing to try to do. And so that's what's really being encouraged here in this purport. That Prabhupada says there's no need to give up the fight. Yes. So Prabhupada's being encouraging here. You know, are you having difficulty in this situation? Well, try that situation. Are you having difficulty in that situation? Try this situation. The real thing is just you got to keep trying to surrender. And that basically is what we, you know, just the obvious. We already know what that means. That means following instructions of the spiritual master. That means taking seriously the basic stuff of Krishna consciousness, chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles, studying the philosophy, trying to render some service. That's what it means to be, you know, to surrender to Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. Anyway, what time is it? Okay, I'll stop. Anybody have any questions? Yeah, Bhakti Jack.
Thank you for a great class. I have two questions. The first one is, why didn't Gajendra just ask the crocodile himself? Like, you're biting my... Sorry. Why didn't the Gajendra ask the crocodile himself? Like, you know, he tries fighting him, but why didn't he say, you know, you're biting my leg, it really hurts, why don't you... Because he can ask Krishna... he has the ability to offer prayers. Why doesn't he go directly to this crocodile? Like, I don't need you cut in half or anything. Just let me go.
There's not a lot of information here. It starts off with he's just behaving kind of just like an elephant. And it doesn't really specifically say it, but at some point it seems like some more than elephant intelligence kind of kicked in. You know, because he was previously King Indradumna in his previous life, and it really doesn't mention that the whole all along he was able to think like that. Or, I mean, it doesn't, as I said, it's not very explicit, but you get the I got the impression when I'm reading it, something a little supernatural happens towards the end there when he decides to surrender to Krishna, and he's offering those amazing prayers, which you wouldn't expect an elephant to be able to offer prayers like that. I mean, you wouldn't even expect a human being to be offered prayers like that. So basically, the direct answer to your question is, why didn't he just kind of try to work it out with the crocodile? He may not have been able to at that point. You know, we don't really know for a fact that he had that ability at that stage of the interaction that he could. And, I mean, generally animals don't do that. Yeah. So, but it seemed like something extraordinary happened there towards the end when he was able to offer those prayers. But that's just my kind of speculation, really. It's not very clearly stated. So.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. If we're doing like some kind of mundane thing, like we're doing our nails or something. And we're like, I just can't do it anymore. I want to give up. And so you surrender to Krishna. You go, oh, hey, Govinda, just like Draupadi. Or in this situation, like you surrender, but it's some like useless mundane thing. Trying to think like, what's the difference between, giving up for like a small reason and surrendering then like for a big reason, like you're being disrobed or you're being eaten alive.
I'm not sure I understand your question, but the basic idea is this, that we're souls in these material bodies, and we're being forced, because we're in the material body, we're being forced to get old, sick, and die, and we're being forced to act materialistically. That's the influence of the three modes of material nature. But some fortunate souls become aware that that's what's going on. That's the situation. They come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, and they start trying to engage in devotional service. And even then, it's difficult. It's a struggle, you see? So, surrendering means that you're praying to Krishna, Krishna, help me. I don't want to be a conditioned soul anymore. I don't want to just my whole life, be acting according to the influences of lust, anger, and greed. I want to be engaged in your devotional service, but these influences are still there, they're still there. So please help me not, the picture in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a picture of the two ladies on the chariot and the horses. Yeah, it's kind of like that. That's exactly our situation, at least those of us who are still conditioned souls. Each one of the senses is desiring its, objects, gratification, and the intelligence is supposed to be directing the whole thing and just keeping us nicely engaged in devotional service. But in that particular picture, that's not what's going on. The senses are just kind of like wild, and they're just pulling the chariot over the cliff. And the intelligence is kind of obviously too weak to control the whole thing, and the soul is kind of freaking out, you see? So that's kind of like, that's our situation. As non-devotees, that's totally the situation. And as new devotees, we're kind of like, We're in that picture. We're like the intelligence that's trying to start getting it together and control those horses of it. So basically, we're praying, chanting Hare Krishna is praying to Krishna. Krishna, give me the strength. Give me strength. Give me some inspiration. Give me some strength to pull this off. To give me the strength to direct these senses and engage them in devotional service, right? So that I'm, not being just pulled to my death by eternal time, and being pulled to another death, and then having to stay in the cycle of repeated birth and death. Praying to Krishna, Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram, Patitam Mam Vishame Bhavamburo, Kripaya Tavapada Pankaja, Stita Dulisa Risam Vachintaya. O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servant. Prabhupada said in one lecture in Mayapur, I think it was the last lecture he gave in Mayapur, 1977, this is the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra. O son of Maharaja Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servant, yet somehow or other I fall into this ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death. In other words, don't let me just be dragged, carried away by my senses. Please pick me up from this ocean of birth and death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. And those engage me in devotional service. Help me engage in devotional service. Help me not succumb to the, you know, the pullings of the senses, and help me just be engaged in your devotional service. Any other questions? Yeah.
Meaning like, I don't know. I guess I have so many things that are going on in my head, and I don't know what direction to head in. And I don't know what my mind is telling me is right and what is really right for my devotional service. Because I know that doing devotional service without actually meditating on Krishna is kind of, I mean, it's a step in the right direction, but it isn't really so much advancement, I suppose.
Yeah, so it's real simple, you know, just how to engage. If you know you're on the mental platform, immediately try to start engaging in devotional service. And it's real simple. You just do the things that, you know, the devotees are telling you to do and what's in Prabhupada's books. And don't necessarily expect that everything's going to get, you know, nice and happy and comfortable right away. It might, but it might not. You just have to be prepared to just, you know, Prabhupada said you have to chalk out your line of duty and follow it. You see? So that means that, you know, despite the fact that your mind might be making a lot of noise or you might not be really feeling like doing some particular thing, just do it anyway. If you know it's the right thing to do, do what you know is the right thing to do, whether it feels comfortable or not. Just like when the alarm goes off at 4, you might not feel like getting up. You might feel like, boy, it'd be really nice to just sleep another half hour, hour, whatever, okay? But you know, well, the right thing to do is, I got to get up. So you just do it. And you know, oh, the shower is going to be cold. There's no hot water here. But anyway, I got to take a shower. I can't go to Mangalore. You do it. So you just do the right thing. Just do what you know with your intelligence is the right thing to do. And just keep doing it. And in due course of time, you'll see everything is, you know, things will kind of fall into place. You'll feel less disturbed. You'll feel less confused. You'll feel, you might even feel very enlivened and inspired and blissful and ecstatic. You know, depending upon how sincerely you really take shelter of the instructions and use your intelligence to just follow those instructions, you know. And it does work. You know, you just have to really apply yourself to the process. Okay, I'll stop there. Anybody? Oh, that's it. Grantrad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Don't, you know, like, you're a brand new devotee, okay? So don't expect that you're going to be able to, you know, sort of like engage in devotional service on the Paramahamsa level right away. Most likely not, you know? So just be patient with yourself. You know, providing you know that I'm making a sincere effort to, you know, to try to do this thing. You know, I'm really, I'm trying. I'm not being like a nonsense. I'm actually trying to do everything properly. You know, like in school, you know, say you're going to school and you know you're really trying. You're doing all the homework. You're going to all the classes. You're writing all the papers. You're doing everything. And so, you know, you might get some A's. You might get some B's. You might get some C's. But, you know, you're not like going to kill yourself. You're not going to beat yourself up about it because you know that, hey, I tried my best, you know. So that's the thing. Just try your best. And that means getting up and chanting. When you're doing your service, whatever service they give you, try to do it nicely. Try to be chanting if possible when you do.